Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card, making personal loans more personal.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Colette.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Griffin dies and nothing gets to be just good anymore. There's all this other stuff.
I went to his grave this week. It was the first time I had been since he was buried. And I stood there and felt nothing.
Well, maybe instead of going where he's dead, you should go where you guys were alive together.
Is that what you do?
I go to Target.
Sort of like the store?
Mm-hmm. We would go on Friday nights to people watch and buy stuff we didn't need.
So do you know which aisle my husband's ghost is on?
No, Target was our place. You have to get your own.
There you go. That's Sorry for Your Loss. Which, and I suppose before we talk about how whether the program's interesting or not, James Dempsey is here to tell us what the hell Facebook Watch is.
So I was vaguely aware of what Facebook Watch was, but without ever engaging with it. It is there. If you have a smartphone and you have the Facebook app, you need to just search Facebook Watch or search in the search bar for a name of any one of the around, I would say, maybe between 30 and 45 programs that are actually natively living on the website or the app.
Okay.
And it is essentially Facebook's attempts to begin to break into the streaming market.
And are these free at the moment?
They are free at the moment, certainly. I'm not sure if that will change. Perhaps more premium content will come down the line at some point. I don't know. But it is there, and it has been there for, I think, about 18 months at this point. It obviously has failed to make a bit of a splash if you're only hearing of it for the first time now. Although I suppose fictional content is not Facebook's biggest problem. They've had other problems with fake news for quite a while.
They're making up too much. It's hard to tell what's
so,
what.
So this is, I don't know how long this is going to last, and I don't see it really truly challenging Netflix, but it is free, right? So that's the unique selling point at this point. So the show that the reason, I was aware vaguely of Facebook Watch. The only show that I knew about it that was on its platform is there's a weekly show called, I think, The Red Roundtable, and it's with Jada Pinkett Smith and Willow Smith and Jada Pinkett's mother, whose name I don't know.
Okay.
And they sort of sit there around a table and talk about whatever they want to talk about, and sometimes bring on a guest. And seemingly this is like a bit of a cult hit, this show.
If you really like Will Smith's family.
If you really like the Smiths.
Yeah.
But this one, Sorry for Your Loss, appeared in a list of the top 10 TV shows of the year that I was reading. Mm. And I was sort of struck by, I must give that a go. And it is about a woman named Lee, played by Elizabeth Olsen, who people will know mostly from the Marvel movies where she plays Scarlet Witch. And is also sister of Mary-Kate and Ashley, twin Olsens, way back when.
Okay.
But who actually sort of cut her teeth in a couple of really well-regarded indie movies, particularly one called Martha, Marcy, Mame, Arlene, or something to that effect, with various other M names. And she hasn't really got much of a chance to do much with Scarlet Witch, because you don't do a lot of heavy lifting if you're a B character in a summer blockbuster. And here you get to see that actually, yeah, she's a fairly solid actress. She knows what she's doing. You also see in it Kelly Marie Tran, who people will recognize from The Last Jedi, where she played one of the supporting characters there, who also gets a chance to flex a bit more thespian action, because this isn't a show about spectacle and special effects. This is like an intimate family drama. And it follows Lee, who is recently widowed, and is sort of split between flashbacks to the time with her husband, who's Matt, who's played by a man named Mamoudou Athi, and her moving in with her family, her mother, who's a divorcee, and her sister, Kelly Marie Tran, who's adopted sister, and coping with her grief and her recent widowhood. Now, it doesn't break new ground in terms of explorations of grief or loss or anything like that. And for me, it wouldn't be among my top 10 TV shows of the year. But I was very impressed by how sort of confident and self-assured it is right from the get-go. It's like it wasn't originally pitched, you might not be surprised to learn, to Facebook Watch because, let's face it, this is like a C-list streaming platform that you've never heard of and is for free on an app that is trying to shake its new identity up, right? But it was originally pitched to Showtime, which is a fairly well-known American network that has made a few big hits that you would know. And has a deal with Sky Atlantic here. So actually all of their stuff, I think, goes straight to Sky Atlantic on this side of the pond. And it was eventually kicked down the line and in search of an investor who would put it on somewhere. And Facebook are the ones who jumped at it. It certainly is deserving of more of an audience than it is actually getting. I mean, if you go onto Facebook and try and find it, I think like only maybe 9,000 people are following its group in Facebook. And, you know, I would imagine if you're the maker of the show, who's a woman named Kit Stein Kellner, you would be wanting more than 9,000 people to be interested.
Well, indeed, actually, I didn't think to, are all the episodes of this available, or how does it work?
So my understanding is two episodes, which are 30 minutes long each, come out every Tuesday. So
okay.
There's now, I think, 8 on the platform. So, and I think maybe there might be only 10 in the season. So the first season is coming to its end. Now, what it explores is her relationship with her family, her relationship with her late spouse, and her relationship specifically with his brother, with whom she has quite a tempestuous relationship. And it's a slow meeting out of, in terms of the flashback of what happened. You know, I think I've seen maybe 5 episodes. We're still not quite sure how her husband came to his untimely end at this, despite a few sort of allusions to it happening in other ways that turn out to have not been the case. So it plays with that form. It also, it goes for a kind of like a very obvious stylistic choice whereby her lifetime with Matt, her husband, is sort of lit in this beautiful, glowing, sunshiny light. And her current everyday is a shade of green.
Yeah.
And that's a very obvious choice, but I guess it maybe is playing on this idea of you look back very fondly at the memories that you had when your life is looking pretty miserable at the moment. But as it goes on, it actually becomes a bit more interesting because you begin to realise that Lee begins to realise that she doesn't know her husband as well at all as she thought she did. And there is, mystery isn't the right word, intrigue isn't the right word, but there's sort of a bit of that going on in what he was up to in his private life, even separate from her. And it's intriguing and it's interesting. And I must say, for a 30-minute show, I thought it was like slick and polished and kind of hitting the right tragicomic notes to keep me interested.
Okay, fair enough. It sounds, sounds
certainly
very engaging.
Worth the punt, and it's free.
Yeah, and it's free, except you couldn't. Could you watch it on a telly?
You could if you have either a Chromecast or an Apple TV, which is what I have.
All right, and on a Chromecast, you can somehow get to
onto the TV. So that is a bit of a, that's a failing for any kind of platform, it being very device specific, right? You really want to be sitting down to watch it on your couch. You don't want to be watching it on a phone or maybe on a tablet.
Some people would,
But I suppose I would limit those myself to when I'm like traveling, right?
Yeah.
But like if I like to sit down on the couch, I like to have a cup of tea, I like to watch the television. I have an Apple TV, so I stream it that way.
All right. Okay. Okay. A couple of bits of TV news, and I assume something, James, that you're excited about. RuPaul Drag Race is coming to the UK.
Yeah. So this has kind of been in the offing for quite a while, and for a long time, Jonathan Ross's name was actually attached to it as in a producer role.
Okay.
He is a huge fan of the show.
Yeah. And Jonathan Ross's Drag Race doesn't have the same ring somewhere.
Particularly with the oar sound, it's not going to be helpful for him either. But he had been trying to get it off the ground. I don't know, sifting through the details, whether or not his name is attached to it. The bad news for us is that it is going to be on BBC Three, which the BBC took off its, we'll say terrestrial or even digital platform, is now available only on online, on the BBC iPlayer. And they are quite territorial with regards to what they accept as being Great Britain and Northern Ireland in their views of that. So don't get me wrong, if you're a fan of the show, if you're a long-standing fan of the show, you've been watching it illegally online for the internet for quite a while anyway. So I'm sure you'll be willing to look.
You'll find a way.
You'll find a way. Now, the interesting thing about it is this isn't the first country to adopt Drag Race. There's also Drag Race Thailand, right, which is completely in Thai and was very gif-able is the word, adjective I would use to describe it, because obviously it's all in a foreign language and not often translated, but the queens were serving looks, I guess is how we would say it. Now, what is of note here is RuPaul is actually going to present it. Just essentially RuPaul's Drag Race, except this side of the Atlantic. And I would say that is certainly going to pique the interest not only of British drag queens, but probably a lot of European drag queens all over the continent, including this side of the Irish Sea, because this is a ticket to, you know, drag global stardom, which is a admittedly small global audience, but still a global audience, because Drag Race plays out in nearly 200 countries around the world, and it is a huge cult hit all over the world.
And well, it's won a shedload of Emmys as
That's true,
and,
yeah.
And well, I suppose we refer to things as cult hits and then, well, millions of people are watching. That's not a cult hit, really. That's a hit hit.
The way I would describe it is, you know, the first episode, so it airs in the US or did air for a long time on Logo TV, which is a channel specifically for gay and lesbian, bisexual women and men. But it has now changed to VHS. Is that, no, that's not right.
VHS.
Yeah. Excuse me. Right.
It's now transferred to the 1980s.
VH1. And I think episodes were averaging, you know, around a million viewers.
Okay.
Which is not by any means...
It's amazing, but it's very respectable.
It's very respectable, right? So perhaps cult hit is not the right word, but a global hit anyway.
Yeah. It's hard though that the BBC would put it in, you know, their online ghetto.
Now look,
it's something that you thought something would have a bit more poke to it.
I guess some things begin their life in the online ghetto of BBC Three and then graduate to BBC Two, and I wouldn't be surprised if that happened.
Yeah. All right. Plus, also, Blockbusters is coming back for the 19th time.
Yeah, and this time Dara O'Brien is attached to it. Now, what I couldn't work out in the sifting through the press release on this is it's going to be on Comedy Central, which produces any number of kind of vehicles for British and, we'll say, Irish comedians, often in celebrity form. So I couldn't tell if this is going to be like celebrity Blockbuster or regular Blockbusters.
Okay.
You know, so all I know is that definitely Dara O'Brien is taking the Bob Holness?
Role,
which has already, I mean, the show began in the 80s, but it's already been rebooted three times to begin with.
Mm.
Most recently in 2012 with Simon Mayo and then Lisa Tarbuck and Michael Aspel going back in time. So there's no shortage of people happy to say, I'll have a pee please, Dara, and work their way across the board.
Yeah. I would suspect then that perhaps because, you know, the Lisa Tarbuck route, that's more your ITV primetime entertainment route. Perhaps this one is going to be a bit more.
I would imagine so,
somehow or another. Right, okay, we do have to take a commercial break after that. She-Ra.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Claire.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
Just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
You should have seen your face. You were like, oh, no, betrayal. Oh, come on, Ketra. We're senior cadets now. I can't believe you're still pulling such childish, immature. Is that a mouse?
What? Where?
Are you ever going to not fall for that?
I don't know. Are you ever going to let it go? That was one time.
I know. But for some reason, it's always funny.
She-Ra and the Princesses of Power. Tricky thing to say that. All episodes of that, season one at least, are now on Netflix. So it's still an animated cartoon series.
Yeah. Now, it's not often that I come in and talk about cartoons which are specifically aimed at children in this slot. But I've definitely done it before because there are some that sort of cross that divide and actually do find, you know, buzzword of the day, a cult audience even amongst adults. And She-Ra is one that already has done so. But that's more so because it came as a legacy show, right? So if you remember He-Man from the 1980s, Adam of Etheria, I think. She-Ra is his twin sister, Adora. And she was created by Mattel in the 1980s to flog toys.
Yeah.
And you got two seasons of 95 episodes of She-Ra being Adora, who transformed through the power of Grayskull into this statuesque disco warrior princess who went around fighting, I think Havelock might be his name, and the evil horde while saving Bright Moon. And basically, when they announced the show was going to be rebooted, they attached quite an interesting name to it. So the showrunner, the creator of this one, is Noel Stevenson, who is an award-winning comic book writer, but who specifically writes comic books for kind of teens and preteens, and is best known for a series called Lumberjanes, which she's won the Eisner Award for, which is kind of like the Oscar, we'll say, of the comic book industry. And when her name was attached, it led to immediately a lot of complaints amongst a sort of rabid and not very woke, shall we say, fanboy online audience, who were immediately afraid that this was going to be a completely progressive and LGBTQI-friendly cartoon, which is exactly what it is.
Right, now, okay, but it wasn't that previously.
Now, yes and no, right? So I am not familiar with She-Ra as an original concept because it sort of predated my cartoon years. But the entirety of She-Ra is available in both original and updated version on Netflix. And while doing my due diligence and avoiding all other work, I decided to watch about 5 episodes of the new one and I think it was 3 episodes of the old one. And I must say, the old one is so camp as to be almost a parody in and of itself. It is like watching an episode of RuPaul's Drag Race while watching it.
Right.
The female characters are all literally exactly the same size because they were designed to sell toys and they could sort of use one mold and sort of just paint them different colours. But they talk with these incredibly camp and silly voices. The characterization is ridiculous. The male characters are, you know, these muscular hunks.
Well, He-Man was always like, he was straight from.
Yeah, right? So the original show was not some like incredibly cis-heteronormative graphic storytelling in the HBO vein. It was this very knowingly winky camp piece of television. Now, this is not as overtly camp, but that is not to say that it isn't full of lots of interesting signifiers of things that will go over your head unless you are in an LGBTQI, lifestyle is not the right word, but that's who you are, right? Now, I didn't know loads of them. I was reading up about the show and loads of things completely went over my head, including a potential reference to a trans character just simply by the way a male character whose name is Bo at one point takes off his sort of jacket and is wearing a kind of binding thing that I wouldn't have even noticed, right? I didn't even notice, but this could be an allusion to sort of a being having been born a girl and now identifying as male. So if you are hearing this and thinking, oh no, PC culture gone mad, all this stuff, right? First of all, this is not being broadcast on The Den or whatever The Den is called today, right? So this is on Netflix. Your child or you, essentially, who pays the bill are enabling any child to do this. Secondly, any of the, you know, what you get here is just a very rounded show, much, much more so than the original one, where characters are different sizes. The designs are not like these, you know, svelte women with large breasts in tiny outfits or muscular men in a loincloth, right? Instead, you get people of different races, people of different sizes, essentially princesses of power coming together to fight off this evil horde.
And is the animation still a bit rubbish? Because it wasn't.
So the animation is, right, there's quite an interesting criticism of this style of animation. Basically, when it was launched, there was a sort of the worst thing you can say to a contemporary animator is that, oh, that's in the Cal Arts style. And Cal Arts is the California Institute of Arts. And this is kind of like a smackdown to describe something as Cal Arts, because a lot of the very popular cartoons of the last, we'll say, 15 to 20 years, including the likes of Dexter's Laboratory and SpongeBob SquarePants, and more recently Steven Universe and Gravity Falls.
Okay.
They all have this quite similar style of characterization, and now it has become this sort of very one-note thing to go, oh, bloody CalArts, the state of it, right? But actually, I liked it. I thought it was quite charming and colourful and bright, and very sweet. Now, I do like some cartoons. Would I watch the entirety of She-Ra to the end of its run? No, for me, it didn't cross that divide for adults, right? There's not quite enough.
It's still a kids' thing.
Yeah, it's still a kids' show. There are other better, more interesting cartoons that play with as much as play as much with issues of identity and stuff like that. Steven Universe being one. If you have Amazon and you have young children, sit down and watch that one with your kids because you'll be really entertained by that one as well. I don't know if adults will really be truly entertained by this. I wasn't. And I'm open-minded when it comes to these kind of things. But I could definitely see my 8-year-old niece, or rather 7-year-old niece, sitting down and watching this and getting really, really, really into it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. But then again, I suppose, but if it's a kid, if it's for 7-year-olds, they're not going to get any of those references.
No, of course not. But
then it's a lot of adults kind of indulging themselves
absolutely.
By having them in there.
And yeah, like the only ones that will get it are such a minute percentage of the audience. Because they're living that, because they're, you know, they're...
they probably have to be grown up as well.
True. But they will actually be seeing themselves on television or characters that they can, you know, not even aspire to be, but recognize traits of. And that's not a bad thing either.
Yeah, I suppose not. Because I do remember watching the original Batman series, which I used to watch as a kid.
Like
TV
show?
Yeah,
the Adam
TV
West
show,
one.
Yeah, the Adam West one. But then... when I was about 15, there was, or something, you know, there was a Batman movie on. And I went, oh my God! Because I didn't get any of it the first time at all. And I felt kind of a bit cheated.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll move on to our third show of the day. It is Colin Murphy's Panic Room. This runs on Fridays at 10 p.m. on BBC Northern Ireland. Here's a clip.
Andy and Paul are instructors at the Northern Ireland Survival School. If I'm going to be someone prepared for the collapse of society, a prepper... they'll teach me the skills.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Colin. How are you?
Good.
You made it. Just to see the big logs over there. Throw your bag off on the way in and get yourself a seat.
Okay. Why do I sense this is a trap? I'm suspicious of everything now.
The guys asked me to bring some survival necessities that I thought would give me the edge.
Gaffer tape.
Multi-tool.
Multi-tool.
Blockbuster's the game. Because, you know, you need some entertainment.
Everybody the can... classic game show returns.
Da-na-da-na.
Through the woods.
Exactly. You're going to be stuck out here. Society's falling apart. There could be zombies walking around. You need to do a gold run. You need, you know...
Okay, so, James, what's the central premise of this?
So, the central premise is that Colin Murphy, the Northern Irish comedian, gets to kind of retread some of the material he did way back when on RTE with The Blizzard of Oz, which is a show I really fondly remember from my developing teenage years. It ran, I think, for maybe 3 or 4 years on RTE2. It has never officially been axed or cancelled, but there hasn't been a series since 2005. So I think that ship has sailed. And he sort of did kind of what you will find a lot on YouTube now, which is where he would talk about the week's television and pick kind of a goggle box, but with a more surreal bent to it. And would then find sort of B-movies, particularly Irish ones, and talk about them and make fun of them. And he was really good at it. It was this really interesting, funny show that I absolutely loved. And he kind of blends that a bit with other things in this time around. So the premise of the show is that he's living in a panic room, bunker style thing, where he does his sort of surreal-y bits. So not quite as surreal as I would like them. I'd like them a bit weirder, to be honest with you. But he picks a topic of the week and then explores it in different ways. So, for example, I think in the first one, it was about how he was so terrified of nuclear war when he was a child, because growing up in Northern Ireland,
the first thing you'd be scared of living in Northern Ireland. I would think not.
Well, the idea that that in, you know, in the Thatcherite government, they would be releasing advice on what to do if there was a nuclear attack, or the drama Threads, which, you know, is very well known as having terrified a generation of viewers. And he explores that as a concept from the safety of, we'll say, his panic room. And those bits work really well. But the problem then is there's this sort of tonal mismatch, because a marked difference between this and, we'll say, an episode of The Blizzard of Oz is that this is a good 30 minutes on BBC with no ads. So there's more to fill in that time frame. And in order to do that, half the episode is sort of spent with him going off and learning about, for example, the final bunker built by NATO ever in the Cold War, which is in Northern Ireland. Yeah. And he goes and visits the bunker and talks to guys about what they could have expected to happen inside the bunker. And certainly he brings a sort of nice, affable charm to it because that's his personality. Mm. He's a very interesting, nice, warm guy. But it then creates this sort of mismatch where he has to kind of wring a bit of comedy out of interacting with everyday normal people while being back in his panic room doing a slightly more surrealist side to it. So it doesn't quite marry itself together in the half hour.
And that idea that he's in the panic room, is he being a character who lives in the panic room, or is it Colin Murphy?
It is
now lives in a panic room.
Yeah, it is Colin Murphy as himself, but he also has by his side a kind of like Alexa type device, Siri type device that he talks to, which is like a speaker with a few LED yeah. lights, which talks with a very BBC Northern Irish woman voice and needs better material for the jokes, in my opinion. So yeah, that's ultimately the thing about it. If you're looking for a Blizzard of Oz style Colin Murphy, I regret to say you're not going to get that. What I do...
Bits of it,
right?
Yeah.
But joyfully, I will admit that having done a bit of Googling last night, a lot of the episodes of The Blizzard of Oz are on YouTube and available for a nostalgia hit. If hearing his voice, has you looking or pining.
You just condemn this with very faint praise altogether. This is okay. Go watch The Blizzard of Oz, though. Right, that's Colin Murphy's Panic Room, Friday's Tempest. Is it on BBC One or Two?
BBC
One of them is on. It's on BBC One of them on Friday night, so you'll just have to switch around and find out. Right, James Dempsey, thanks a million for coming into us. We'll take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card, making personal loans more personal.